they had gone through all the things that you were trying to go through in those days. And after spending about 2 weeks with Hannes Lobert, his knowledge of baseball and how to teach it just amazed me. In fact, after I became a manager in later years, I used a lot of the things that Hannes talked to me about.
Such as?
Running the bases. Hannes was a great runner when he was young, probably the fastest man in baseball. And he gave me some ideas on how he would train a ball club, if given the opportunity to be a manager. Like he would teach them all how to run bases during spring training and use that as the running part of his program. And I did that after I got managing in the major league. We did all our infielder, outfielders, and catchers conditioning exercise by running the bases. And as a result, Pittsburgh always had good base running ball clubs.
So in other words, you were really killing two birds with one stone. You were getting in condition running-wise and also
teaching
how to run the bases.
That's
probably
right.
At the same time.
And he was one of the first men that ever told me that baseball in spring training, you always have two things you have to concern yourself with: teaching and also getting into condition. And he said if I had ever got an opportunity to manage, I should remember that if I could incorporate teaching and conditioning in the same lesson, I would save a lot of much needed time during spring training. And that's what I always tried to do. And while we're talking about old players, I did have an opportunity to be with Hannes Wagner for a couple years when I was playing in Pittsburgh. And Hannes was older than Hannes Wagner was older than Lobert, and I would say that a lot of the young fellows on the ball club kind of forgot the fact that Hannes Wagner was a great ball player and he knew a lot about the game. And I got talking to Hannes Wagner quite a bit, and that whole year in 1948, Hannes used to sit in the special spot down the right field line in Pittsburgh, and I'd look around, and Hannes, I guess he was 70 or 75 in those days, he would position me according to the guys hitting on the other ball club, and never at any time was he wrong. So therefore, if you recall, back in 1948, a fellow named Rojek and myself, we set a few records defensing in the infield, and it was a direct result of Hannes Wagner telling us both where to play. So I had learned from Hannes Wagner and Hannes Lobert that all the brains is not relegated to youth. So therefore, when I went into managing, when I selected my coaches, I didn't feel that I had to get the young fellows to do my coaching, because I had learned from my association with Lobert and Wagner that them old people were pretty smart too. And as a result, I picked a lot of older fellows to coach for me, and I think the results bear my theory out.
I see. In 1942, if I'm not mistaken, you played mostly short. I think you divided your time with Bobby Gregg. You had Al Blossom apparently left, and you played second in 43. Now, is it because that Bregan and Blossom had left that you switched?
No. In 1942, I recall that I was going to be a utility man. And we had a lot of athletes coming in and leaving for the Army. And as a result, we felt that we had a second baseman that could play. I think, was it Glossop in those days?
Right.
And therefore, they wanted to switch Bobby Bregan from short to catching. That's when he made the switch from infield to catching. Mm-hmm. And there was only one young fellow, young enough and agile enough to play shortstop. And it was me. I recall in 1942, there was a few times when we'd go on the road, we'd only have about 19 or 20 ball players. So therefore, I was picked because I was young enough and I had the range. I never did have the arm to play shortstop, and I knew I was out of position. Mm-hmm. And then after I was able to get back to second, I never wanted to play shortstop again. But it was just the result of 42 of playing shortstop, where I was the only one available.
So in other words, you came up as a second baseman. Your minor league experience had been as a second baseman.
That's right, because I never had an arm enough to play shortstop in higher minor league baseball or major league baseball.
I see. What do you remember about Glossop? Do you remember anything about him?
Well, we used to call him Heba Hob. I don't know why he got that nickname or not. But Al, even in those days, we thought had a few years on us, and he was a great, I wouldn't call him a great, but he was a switch hitter. Mm-hmm. And he had power on both sides. He was a steady fielder. We became friends. In fact, he still would come out to see me when I was managing them. We'd get into L.A. He has a store down the L.A. area.
Oh, really?
I don't know whether he still has it or not. He was just a pretty good ball player, and he was like a lot of us. In those days, a lot of us did get to the major leagues because the outstanding personnel had left for the services.
I see. What about Nick Epley? I believe he was your first baseman.
Nick was our first baseman, and Nick was a good hitter. I tell one story about the man Nick. I was young, and I was very fast when I was a kid, and I was an outstanding defensive ball player.
Good hands.
I was a good second baseman, and there was a few balls hit between first and second that I thought that Nick was just running to the bag and letting me try to get the ball. So one day I told him, I said, Nick, I think there's a few balls being hit down here that you should make an effort to get to. And like I said, Nick was a little bit older than me. He looked at me and he said, son, he said, they pay old Nick to hit. He says, you can't hit, so you catch all them balls and I'll knock the runs in for both of us.
Beautiful. That's a good one. What about Danny Littweiler?
Danny Littweiler, except for one failing, would have been one of the great ball players. Danny, when I got to play with him in Philadelphia, couldn't throw. Now, I don't know whether he could throw when he was a young fellow coming up, but when he got to the Phillies, he had hurt his arm somewhere along the line, so therefore Danny had a very weak arm. But Danny had one of the best pair of hands in left field that you ever wanted to see. He could cover all the ground a left fielder had to cover. He could catch any ball he got his hands on. But then after he got to the ball, that infielder had to go way out to get the relay from Danny. And Danny was a power hitter. And in those days, when you were a power hitter with the Phillies, you were working under trying circumstances because if you had any power at all, the other team would pitch around you and go to the next man. I would say that had Danny been with another ball club, his home run output would have maybe got the 5 or 10 more a year because they would have pitched to him that much more. Danny had all the tools, with the exception of the arm, to be one of the outstanding ball players of our time.
I suppose the same thing was true as far as Ron Yorkey was concerned. They could pitch around him.
They could pitch around Ron, and Ron had the great arm. I would say that possibly he and Frilla, they ranked with the great arms in right field with in those war years. Ron had a little trouble. He played right and I played second base, and Ron had a bad ear. In other words, he couldn't hear a lot. And we did have a few collisions out there in right field, but also Ron wound up with knee trouble. So I would say that Ron was a victim of injuries in his career. But as time went on...
And what do you mean wound up with knee trouble?
He had a knee that had to get wired up. He hurt it somewhere along the line.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And as a result, he couldn't play every day. But Ron turned out to be a great pinch hitter.
And was this during the war? Did he have knee trouble?
Yeah, he had
a
knee trouble and he couldn't hear. I would say that Ron... the only reason he had to go into service was because he was an athlete. With them circumstances, there toward in those war years, they were taking the athletes. He really had to be battered up not to go. And I would say, under normal circumstances, had Ron not been an athlete, he wouldn't have had to go into the service because like I said, he had the bad knee and he was hard of hearing. And I always had a warm spot in my heart for Ron because of the fact that when I went managing in 1955 in Charleston, it was an independent ball club, and we were having financial difficulties, and we would try to get a player going good for a week or two so we could sell him in order to meet the payroll. And I got Ron going so good one time that I sold him and got two payrolls out of Northie.
So wonderful.
And when I had a chance to repay the favor when I was managing Pittsburgh and I needed a coach, I brought Ron with me. Mm-hmm. We were close friends all his life, Ron and I. He had suffered a heart attack while playing a game of bridge one night with his wife and a couple friends of theirs, and his leaving was rather sudden.
Mm-hmm. What about Q.P. Barrett?
My God, you are going back.
Specific
Dick Barrett was a pitcher from the Coast League. And the first thing I remember about Dick Barrett, I was never known as a home run hitter. And I had played like 4 or 5 years and didn't hit a home run. And we were playing in Chicago one year, and the Cubs, I think this is 1942 or 43, and the Cubs pitched a boy named Dick Barrett against us. And I hit a home run. And it was my first home run of my major league career. I didn't get too many more after that. And then the next time I saw Barrett, he was pitching for the Phillies. And so I would imagine they felt if I got a home run off him, he practically didn't have anything left. But he was what they called a cutie. He had a lot of curve balls, a fair fastball, but he got the ball over the plate. And I would say that under normal circumstances, Dick was a wartime pitcher in the major leagues. He was old then when he came up, possibly before I got to see him. You know, in those days, they didn't bring too many pitchers up that stuck right away. And if you didn't stick the first time, you sort of had an enigma after your name. In other words, they said, he had his chance, now we'll give somebody else. And I would say with the records that Dick Barrett had in the Coast League, that probably he had should have gotten a shot sooner than he did.
I see. What about Al Gerhauser? He passed away a few months ago, I believe.
Boy, you are reaching down for a lot of names. He was a big left-handed pitcher. I think the Yankees either traded or sold Al Gerhauser to the Phillies, or we may have drafted him. I don't recall. But he was a big fella, and the thing I remember, he had that overhand fastball and the good curveball. A lot of things that you must realize, some of these pitchers that you have mentioned, if they had come up with another ball club, they might have been pretty good pitchers. In those days when I played with the Phillies, we were a collection of misfits. We didn't have very good personnel on the ball club. We were playing with a bunch of casts off that the other fellows had let us have. And I would say we practically didn't have any farm system whatsoever. And therefore, as a result, all these young players that you mentioned to me, there was a good chance that they could have been good ball players and maybe outstanding ball players with other teams. But because we were such a poor ball club, naturally, their records wouldn't indicate that they were good athletes.
Do you remember anything about Buster Adams?
Yes. Buster was a fellow that we got from the Cardinals. Now Buster was if he'd have stayed with the Cardinals, he would have been an outstanding ball player because they were the class of the league in those days. And Buster had the power to hit between 20 and 30 home runs. He was a fine defensive center fielder with a fine arm. He could do everything a good young ball player had to do. And I think that we were very fortunate when I was at the Phillies to get Buster over there with us. Because he was one of the few major league ball players we had.
If I'm not mistaken, he went back to the Cardinals and played in the 46 club with them.
Is that right?
Yeah, Whitey Karaski was my first interview with him. He had an extra copy of the 46 team photo.
Whitey Karaski, that name bring back a few memories.
Oh.
I was playing in the Cardinal organization, and so was Whitey. And I was a second baseman in Rochester playing third base. And Whitey was a third baseman in Columbus playing second base. So now that I guess the two clubs got together and decided that I should be playing second and Whitey should be playing third. So they got me off a train up in Utica and told me, this was in the middle of the night, they told me that they were shipping me to Columbus. So I got to Columbus and I went to an old hotel called the Southern Hotel. And I asked, they had a guy named Karaski there, and they said, yeah. So they gave me the key to the room, and I walked up, and I saw this blonde head in the bed, and I shook him, and I said, hey, are you Karaski? He says, yeah. I said, well, you better get up, because they just traded you for me. So he got up and went down to the office, and I crawled into the warm bed. That was
beautiful.
The first time we had met.
Beautiful. What about Stan Benjamin?
Now, there was another fellow that should have been a great ball player. I would say Stan was 6'4" and must have weighed 200 to 220. In those days, I wouldn't have been afraid to say that Stan was the fastest runner in the National League.
Even at that height?
Yes, he could run. And he had some power. When I was with the Phillies, he never was a consistent hitter. He was an occasional home run hitter. But he could run, he could throw, and he could field. He had a physical ailment. that I don't like to describe, and I don't believe I should. That
okay.
I felt that had he corrected that physical ailment at an earlier age, mm-hmm. he would have been a much better ball player. He had a pair of testicles about that big. And, you know, they would never let him cut on them.
Yeah, I see. What about Babe Dahlgren? I believe he joined the club
yes.
43.
Well, Babe Dahlgren was the first baseman of the Yankees. But by the time he joined our ball club in 43, we felt that our biggest need was a shortstop. And our manager, Bucky Harris, thought that since Dahlgren was such an exceptional young fellow with so much great agility around first base that he could make the transition from first to short. Mm-hmm. And our club put Babe on short. And he just did a tremendous job out there at shortstop for us. I would say in 1943, up until, I guess, July, the Phillies were up around the first division.
Oh, really?
I really think so. We had a pretty good ball club by the time 1943 rolled around. We won some ball
games.
Yes, we were starting to get that mixture of youth plus the good, old, experienced ball player. Mm-hmm. And I would say that if that 43 ball club had stayed together for a year or two, plus hoping that you would get a couple more young fellas and pick up an older fella, we might have had a pretty good ball club by the time the 1945 season rolled around. But Babe was a tremendous ball player for us. He hit well. In fact, I would say he led the league for a long period of time in 1943 until he went into a slump.